Turn to the second epistle of John. Second epistle of John, and if you don't know where that is, go to Revelation and start backwards and you'll find it real quick. Second epistle of John, and it is a short book, a short letter. And so I'd like to read the whole letter, and then I'll make a few comments about it. And I'll tell you the title of my message here in just a moment. But let's read that second letter of John, beginning at the first verse. It says, "The elder," talking about himself, "unto the elect lady and her children, whom I love in the truth, and not I only, but also they that have known the truth. For the truth's sake, which dwelleth in us and shall be with us forever. Grace be unto you, mercy and peace from God the Father and from the Lord Jesus Christ, the Son of the Father, in truth and love. I rejoiced greatly that I found of thy children walking in truth, as we have received the commandment from the Father. And now I beseech thee, lady, not as though I wrote a new commandment unto thee, but that which we had from the beginning, that we love one another. And this is love, that we walk after his commandments. This is the commandment, that as you have heard from the beginning, you should walk in it. For many deceivers are entered into the world, who confess not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh. This is a deceiver and an antichrist. Look not to yourselves that we lose not, or I'm sorry, look to yourselves that we lose not those things which we have wrought, but that we receive a full reward. Whosoever transgresseth and abideth not in the doctrine of Christ hath not God. He that abideth in the doctrine of Christ, he hath both the Father and the Son. If there come any unto you and bring not this doctrine, receive him not into your house, neither bid him Godspeed, for he that biddeth him Godspeed is partaker of his evil deeds. Having many things to write unto you, I would not write with paper and ink, but I trust to come unto you and speak face to face, that our joy may be full. That the children of thy elect sister greet thee. Amen." Now, that letter is a personal letter. Many believe that it might have been written to a church, referring to the elect lady, but I think that more so than not believe indeed that it was written to an individual. That word that's translated lady can also be translated as a proper name, Caius. I tend to go along the lines that it was written to an individual that the Apostle John knew. If you read the third epistle, the very next one, it is written to an individual named Caius, a gentleman that John knew and addressed him. John even referred to him as my child. Although he was not a child of John in the natural, but no doubt he was a product of John's preaching, and therefore John considered himself as a father and the man as a child. And so the letters are very similar, and there are some important points in it that are worthy of our study. But I want to call your attention primarily to the fourth verse, which would be my text this morning, where John told the lady that he was writing the letter to. And at this time, he was somewhere in the area of Asia Minor. He spent the last number of his years with his residence at Ephesus, attending the church at Ephesus. No doubt she was in that same area. And whether he was in Ephesus proper or where he might have been when he wrote the letter, we're not sure. But he intended to see her soon. That's why he said it was such a short letter, that he intended to see her very soon and to speak to her face to face. But no doubt, wherever that he was, word had gotten to him of her children. And it says that, "I rejoiced greatly that I found of thy children walking in truth, as we have received a commandment of the Father." And that would be my thought this morning, and it is a lesson for all of us. Not just for those who might be a mother or father here today, for I realize that some may not have natural children, but each one of us is a child of a mother. somewhere along the way. My mother has gone to be with the Lord, and I'm confident of that, as confident as I can be, because of the example that she set before me, of the testimony that she gave and the testimony that she left behind. Many of you here this morning, that your parents, your mother, your father have already gone on, and I hope that you have an assurance in your heart as well that they left behind a testimony, not just in word, but in deed and in action. And wherever that they might be, whether they're living or deceased, I would leave each of us, and I include myself this morning, in that, is that are we found walking in the truth? And the title of my lesson this morning, and it's an applicable one for me as well as to you, your children or grandchildren, and that is, are you mama's joy or mama's heartache? Are you mama's joy or mama's heartache? And, you know, it's something that we each need to think about personally. My mom, as I said, has already gone on to be with the Lord, and my dad a great number of years ago. But I truly believe that they are with the Lord, and I pray that my actions and the things that I am about would bring joy to them, as I have joy in my heart this morning, and I mentioned it early on, just that I might be able to say that. I have joy in my heart this morning because my children and grandchildren are in church this morning, and I believe that they're walking, serving the Lord. Now, that has not always been the case. My son, like myself, got out into the world, and he was not walking in truth. He was not walking in the way that he was brought up, and it was a great heartache to me and a greater heartache to his mom. I can tell you, she worried and fretted. And there was one time even in Australia where that I called to the United States to try to track him down because mama was worried about him because of the lifestyle that he was involved in at the time. And so it's an applicable question that each one of us should ask ourselves. Are we mama's joy or are we mama's heartache? And it all has to do with the way that we're walking in the world and the things that we're doing. And John said here that he said, I rejoiced greatly that I found thy children. And actually, let me tell you what that says. And if you read it in some of the other versions, you'll see that it's true. What John said was, I rejoiced greatly that I found of thy children, meaning some of thy children, walking in truth. It was not evident that all of her children were, but some were. And John rejoiced over those that he had heard of and that he had personally found walking in truth. There are many parents that have gone down to their grave with a mixed joy and heartache, because some of their children followed after the Lord and served the Lord, and they found great joy. But some of their children did not. Some of their children went another direction. And I can tell you that for a godly mother or a godly father, that it brings a heartache. Now, they may be successful in life, but if they're not walking in truth, there's a heartache that just can't go away. And that's what we want to talk a little bit about this morning. Because this joy that we're talking about can only be experienced by a Christian mother or father. It can only be experienced by a Christian. And I say that because a mother or a father who has not brought their children, who themselves are not walking after the Lord, they might have joy in their children. They might have joy that they've become doctors or lawyers, or that they've been successful in business, or maybe they've become a great entertainer or a politician. They may find joy in that, but the kind of joy that I'm talking about this morning, the kind of joy where that your children are walking in truth, only a Christian can know that kind of joy. Because the mother or father who themselves are not following after the Lord and have not brought their children up in the way to walk after the Lord have no clue what that's about or how important that it is. Those of us who have tried to bring our children up in the way of the Lord, and that is the most important thing in our lives, That's the most important thing in our children's lives. My son has been successful. He has a good living. He has a good family. My daughter the same. And I'm proud of them. Find joy in the fact that they've taken care of themselves. They have good work ethics. They're well spoken of in the community. But most of all, I find joy because that I know that they're walking after the Lord and they're bringing their children up to walk after the Lord. And so that's an important point for us to understand. And I even, as my little notes that I put down, I wrote it in big letters. Important that this is a joy that only a Christian parent can experience. And if you're here this morning and you've not been saved, you won't know the kind of joy that I'm talking about, nor will you experience the same kind of heartache. Because the Christian mother or the Christian father whose joy is in the Lord, they want their children to enjoy that same joy and to walk in that same pathway. And when it doesn't happen, it brings great sorrow to their heart as well. And so this is a peculiar joy that Christians have, is to see their children walking in truth. We're going to talk about what truth is in just a moment. But I want you to think about that again. Where have you put your hopes in your children? Where are your children putting their hopes in their children? If it's after the things of the world, you may find momentary joy. You may find great joy in seeing the things that they accomplish. And I'm not saying that those things are bad. I'm not saying that it's bad that your children have been successful in business or that they've been successful in the things that they've pursued and that they maybe they're well spoken of in those things. But to know the Lord and to walk after the Lord, that's the most important thing. That's what John says here. That's what he's talking about, the commandment. The commandment that we received of the Father, that we not only love one another, but that we love His Son, Jesus Christ, and that we walk after Him. And so John makes it specific that the joy he has is because of the love that they have manifested toward God and that he has seen in the actions of their life. And so that is an important thing. Now, you may sit here this morning and you may say, well, my children know the truth. I've taken them to church. And that's good. That's important. But there's a vast difference between hearing, knowing, and doing. The first thing the Bible teaches us is that we need to hear. How can they be saved except that they hear? And so it's important to bring them to church. I love my mother and my father. I'm thankful that they took me to hear the gospel. But hearing is not the same as doing. Hearing is not the same as knowing. And by knowing, I mean that I learn those things. Many people come, they'll hear things, and it'll go in one ear and out the other. And they really have never grasped it, nor had a desire to. I find it hard to believe that anyone could live in America and not have heard the gospel. Now, maybe there are. Maybe there are, but it's on the radio waves. It's on the television. It's at every mission. Everywhere that food is given out by churches, clothing pantries. Anybody who walks in and takes advantage of those things, I'm here to tell you that the gospel has gone out all over America, and it's hard for me to imagine that someone has not heard. Now, maybe they didn't pay any attention. Maybe they never had a good example from mother or father or school or companions or whatever. And maybe they have not learned. But I believe that God's people have been faithful to preach the gospel, and it has gone out all over America, and it even goes out all over the world today. But hearing and knowing are two different things. And whether or not that they have sought to know and understand and have a mental comprehension, that is strictly another matter. Now, you may say this morning, my children know the truth. They heard it, and they know it. They can recite the doctrines. They can recite Bible verses. And so I know they know it in their head, and that may be true. But again, there's a difference between hearing, knowing, and doing. And my question this morning for all of us, for all of us, not just because that you may have children that either here or not here, but us as children of our parents, are we doing the truth? Are we living the things that we have heard and the things that we know in our mind? And are we walking according to that truth? That is the question this morning. And that's what will bring joy to a Christian mother or father, is to see and hear that their children are walking in truth. I ask you a question this morning. Was it not joy in your heart when that your children were saved? We were singing that song, "He Set Me Free." My mind went to Todd Reynolds. He's not even my son. But I was there in church with him after he got saved. I wasn't there the night he got saved. But I saw him being brought up. And I know that was his favorite song. And I know this morning Cindy got a text from Ann, and Jerry and Ann are out in Knoxville with Todd and his wife. And so I know that Jerry and Ann find great joy that Todd is walking in the ways of the Lord, and that he's bringing his family up that way. And so it was great joy when I saw my children saved. It was a hurting in my heart when I saw them come under conviction, when I saw that they were feeling the hard pressure of the hand of God upon them, that He might save their soul and that He might deliver them from their sin. All that was great sorrow. But sorrow comes before joy. And when they got saved and they told about it, it was great joy in our hearts to hear our children tell their testimony that God had saved them. And was it not a joy when that, and I've heard many of you tell about the revival times in which not only you were saved, but that you saw some of your children saved. And obviously it was great joy to you. It was joy when I heard that my son announced his call to preach a few years ago. But a greater joy for me was I heard at the same time that my oldest grandson was saved in that same meeting. And then later I heard that my next oldest grandson was saved in Spotsylvania in a church meeting out there. And I've got six more coming along that I'm anxious, and I'll rejoice when I hear that they have been saved. And until that they have been, then I'm going to have great anxiety and anticipation. But I'm thankful that their parents have them where they can hear the gospel this morning. We cannot stop just because that we've been saved or that our children have been saved, because we've got grandchildren and great-grandchildren and a whole train that's coming behind us that our actions will have an influence upon. Was it not joy? Was it not joy when on their own, out of their own heart, your children said, "I want to join this church and be a part of God's people, and I want to proclaim it to the world through baptism"? Was that not a joy? You see, that's why we believe in believer's baptism. A lot of parents take great joy and get all puffed up when they take their little infant down and to the church, and they have the preacher sprinkle some water on them and say that they've been baptized. And who gets joy out of that? The parents do, but what about the child? That unconscious infant who's really done nothing on their own. But we have a different joy because our joy was not in that we did it for our children, but that our children got saved by the grace of God, and they, by the Spirit of God that was in them, chose to follow after Him and to join with God's people and to proclaim it to the whole world through baptism. There was great joy in that. Oh, but then many of us saw our children go back out into the world. My parents saw me being pulled into the world when I got into college. And I know that I became a heartache for them. Oh, they were joyful that I had been saved. They were joyful that I had been baptized. But they had a heartache because I was not walking in the truth. And I did that for a number of years. And after that, I had repented of my waywardness and returned to the Lord. And the Lord graciously forgave me and restored the joy to me of my salvation. My greatest sorrow was the heartache that I had caused my parents. I can't tell you how many times that I told my dad, "I am so sorry for my waywardness, because then I realized the sorrow that my actions had brought upon them. I don't think that they doubted that I would be saved eternally, because they believed in eternal security and that if I'd been saved, I was going to be saved. But it is a heartache to not see your children walking after the Lord. And so it's a heartache that's special to Christian parents, and it's a joy that's special to Christian parents. And so, with that, I would ask you the question, because John said, I rejoice that they were walking in the truth. Well, what does it mean to walk in the truth? It doesn't mean just to simply maintain or know the doctrines. You see, I could repeat all the doctrines. I was well educated as a young boy. I could sit down and discuss premillennialism with you. I could discuss dispensationalism with you. I could discuss all the Baptist doctrines that we know in our articles of faith. I learned those. My dad was a good teacher, and I learned them. I had a quick mind. But you know what? Knowing those things is not the same as walking in them. And there was a time in my life, even when I got married and had children, that I was not walking in the truth that I knew. And so it's not enough to say, well, my children know, they've learned all the doctrines, because that's not what John is talking about. Because walking in the truth means to outplay, to live out your life consistent and continually with godly character. That's what it means to walk in the truth. To walk after God. To walk after in the same character as Jesus Christ, His Son, walked upon the earth. That's what it means to walk in the truth. You can know it and you can recite it, but it is not the same as walking in it consistently in your life and living your life on a day-to-day basis, so that as the world looks at you, they see a reflection of God and the character of Christ, and a reflection, hopefully, upon that which their parents have walked before them and continue to walk in. That's why I say that we cannot give up. Because our children are still walking, if they're living, and they're still walking, they're still looking at our pathway to see where that is going. And so to walk in the truth means to outplay or to live out your life on a day-to-day basis, showing forth the honor and glory of God, being honest and faithful and true, and proclaiming and lifting up God. You see, that's why when we get back to this personal letter that John wrote, I think there was something going on behind the scenes. Because as John said, that I greatly rejoice that some of your children are walking in the truth, and then he immediately goes in to deceivers that are out in the world, and many of the deceivers have gone out, and he cautions her, don't open your doors to these receivers, to these deceivers, don't let them in your house, don't give them a Godspeed, because that they are deceivers, and they are leading people away from Christ, and into the things of the world. And so I feel that probably based on this letter, that John was cautioning her and worried about some of her children, that they were being misled and misguided by so-called religious teachers. That's a worry. It's a worry when we see our children who are raised and brought up, not just because we have Baptists over the door, but because that we bring our children up, we preach, we practice that salvation is a no-so salvation. It's one in which that your heart is changed. It's one in which that you have a personal relationship with God, and that you know that you've been saved, and you know it beyond any shadow of a doubt. And yet the world is teaching an intellectual salvation. It's teaching one that the mind grasps, but not necessarily the heart, to where that it motivates the action. And yet, it's a worry when we see our children being caught up in these things. There are many that are not here in this church this morning, that if they're in church, many are in these big mega church environments, where it's a deceptive type of a gospel that they're hearing, that all you've got to do is make a decision or accept Christ and repeat a prayer. Those things will deceive them and cause them them and their children to walk down a wrong pathway. And so that's a worry, as it ought to be. Now remember, the world cannot see what you think or see what you know, and you might be able to regurgitate all the doctrines of this book and all the principles that are taught in here. You might be able to regurgitate them and speak them, but the world only knows the actions that they see out of each one of us. And so it's important that the Word come to us, to our ears, and that as the world sees us, that they see that we're walking in the truth. Now, I want to talk a little bit more about this joy before I run out of time. And that is that this is a healthy joy. It's a joy that is healthy for Christians to have. And you know why I say that? I say that because that has been God's plan all along. God's plan all along is that we would have a relationship with Him. We would have fellowship with Him. We would walk in the light of His smile, that He would be able to bless us. And that we were to bring our children up to teach them about God, to introduce them to God's ways, to live out our life before them, that they too would embrace God, and that they would teach their children the same thing. That's what God intended. And so if our children are walking in truth, and we have joy in that, then it's a good thing. It's the right thing because that's what God intended. Abraham was glad when Isaac followed after him. Isaac was glad when Jacob followed after him. David was glad when Solomon followed after him. And so many are proud in the world who have great businesses, and you'll see the name over such and such and son, and they become very proud that their children follow them into the hardware business or the law practice or whatever that the family business might be. We like to watch Blue Bloods, and that's the story of a family in New York that were all policemen or serving in the police force. If you haven't watched it, it's an interesting program. And so they're proud. That was the family business, if you will. And that was a good noteworthy business. But I tell you what, there's nothing better than the family business of serving the Lord. And there's great joy when we see our children come along and fill up the pews and take up their place. Because we're going to lay down our life one of these days, and we're going to be out there in that cemetery or one similar to it somewhere. And there's great joy in our hearts when we see our children filling up these pews, becoming the song leaders, becoming the Sunday school teachers, and they begin to bring their children to church, and their children begin to learn, and we see that succession go forth in our family, and we find great joy in that, and it's a good, healthy joy. Because that's what God intended for us to be. Sons pick up where the fathers left off. I find great joy in that my son is preaching the gospel. And he'll do a much better job than I'm able to do if he'll stay close to the Lord. I find joy in that, but it's not my doing. It's God's doing. God's the one who called him. But is that out of the ordinary? No, it's not. You can many times find generation after generation where that the sons followed the father into the pulpit, and it'll go on for three and four generations until somebody gets out of the way, and then their children don't continue to follow, or they follow the wrong direction. And so this is good that our children pick up where we leave off. Our daughters replicate in the teaching of their children the things that they learned from their mothers. And there's nothing that's any more valuable other than salvation than having a godly mother, as we talked about in Sunday school this morning, that taught us the right principles, the right character, the way that we are to behave ourselves, the way that we are to conduct ourselves, and having a praying mother who cared about our souls and passed that on to their daughters, and their daughters passed that on to their children. As I was studying this lesson, I thought about the Apostle Paul as he wrote to Timothy. Who was Timothy? Timothy was a young preacher that was Paul's protege, if you will, and Paul was trying to instruct him and teach him. And here's what Paul said in the second letter that he wrote to Timothy, 2 Timothy, beginning about in the first chapter in the third verse. I want to read this. Here's what Paul said. He said, "I thank God whom I serve from my forefathers with pure conscience. In other words, his forefathers had served God, and he thanked God for them, and he had a pure conscience toward God, that without ceasing I have remembrance of thee, Timothy, in my prayers night and day, greatly desiring to see thee, being mindful of thy tears, that I may be filled with joy. Paul had joy in Timothy's service. Timothy was not his natural son, but Timothy seemed to have been a product of Paul preaching the gospel, but the foundation had been laid before Paul ever got there, because listen to what he said. Listen to what he said. He said, "When I call to remembrance the unfeigned faith that is in thee, which dwelt first in thy grandmother Lois and thy mother Eunice, and I'm persuaded in thee as well." And so Paul takes it all the way back to the grandmother and said, the faith that you have started with your grandmother, passed on down to your mother, and I'm persuaded it's in you as well, and I find great joy in that. And folks, what greater joy can we have here on this earth than to see that our children walk in truth? That they walk in truth. That joy that we're talking about, it's contagious. It's catching. When you have one saved, you want to see them all saved. You may have six kids, eight kids. What one of them would you leave behind? What one of them would you be satisfied to let them die lost? Because you see, that joy that we have when we see one of them saved, we want to see them all saved. I want to see your children saved. I want to see Logan and Chris and Bella, those who have acknowledged that they're lost. I want to see them saved. I can't save them any more than you could save them. But there's one thing about it. We can walk godly before them. We can seek and desire the presence of the Holy Spirit in our services, that God may deal with their heart and that we would lift them up before God that they might be saved. I'm not going to be satisfied until all of your children are saved. I've got six grandchildren that a couple of them are just beginning to come to the age of accountability, and I'm not going to be satisfied until they're saved. And so it's a contagious joy. It's one that I want to experience with all of my grandchildren. I want to see, I've got an 18-year-old grandson, almost 19, and now I'm starting to worry. I'm starting to get that a little bit of heartache because I see him being pulled into the world. I see him not walking exactly as he should. I know that his dad has had a long talk with him about some things, because that Nathan is worried about him just as my father was worried about me and just as I was worried about Nathan. And so it never stops being a parent. It never stops being concerned about them and praying for them to walk in the ways of the Lord. I would continue to ask you, which one would you leave behind? Which one is not important enough that you would do everything in your power to see that they're saved? And the very first thing that you need to do is make sure they're in church. Make sure that they hear. Because they have to hear that they might know, and they might and then that they might walk, and that they might do. And so that's where it begins. You're worried about your grandkids. I realize that you only have a certain amount of power to get them to come to church. We didn't have power to make Nathan and Carly take our grandchildren to church. We didn't have that in our power. We prayed about it. We tried to set the example. And we even contacted friends that we had when they were in Virginia to contact them to try to persuade them. We did everything that we could to try to make sure that they got in church so that their children could be brought up in church. And folks, we need to do that. We need to do that to make sure to do all we can that they're in church where that they might hear the truth. One last thought, and that is the alternative is devastating. The alternative is devastating. What if my children do not walk in truth? What if my children aren't saved? What if my grandchildren aren't saved? Life is going to pass by. They may be successful in whatever they undertake to do as far as the world is concerned, but life is just like that. It's a snap of a finger. It's a breath. It's a withered flower. It's going to pass quickly. And there's an eternity out there. And the devastating alternative is that if my children don't walk in truth and don't know the truth and don't serve God, that they could be lost eternally. They could be lost eternally and go to a devil's hell. And that's a terrible alternative. It's not one that I'm willing to live with my grandchildren. It's not one that I'm going to be satisfied with. I'm going to be like Rebecca of old. Lord, give me children, or Rachel rather, of old, who was barren and couldn't have any children. She became so anxious. She cried out to God, God, give me children, at least I perish. We need to have that kind of zeal and desire to see our grandchildren and our children saved. And I'm not going to be satisfied until they are. And not just mine, but yours as well. And I hope that if I'm gone tomorrow, that the next preacher that fills this pulpit will have the same concern for your children. I'm concerned this morning that some of your children and grandchildren are not in church. I'm concerned. You say, well, what's it to you, preacher? Well, it's because I care. I know that life is going to pass by, and no matter how good they were at camping, no matter how good they might have been at being cheerleaders, or how good they might have been in this or that or the other, none of that is going to matter if they don't know the Lord.
Amen.
And if they know the Lord and don't walk in the pathway, it's going to have an adverse effect on their children and their grandchildren. And until the Lord comes back and time continues to go on, every soul that is born into this life needs to be saved somewhere along the way. Just because that I'm gone or you're gone doesn't mean that the next generation won't need to be saved the same way, because they will. And so, Brother Jake, if you've got a song, I'm going to leave you with this thought. How would Mama find you today? Walking in truth and the love of Christ to her great joy, or walking in the ways of darkness to her great heartache? Only you can answer that. Only you can answer that. How would your mom find you today? Would you be a joy to her, or would you be a heartache because of the direction that you've chosen to take in life? I wish these pews were filled with children and grandchildren who need to hear this message. It's a terrible thing to know the truth and not walk in it. It's a terrible thing, and it's a heartache. It's a heartache to parents and preachers alike. Brother Jake, go ahead.
Right.
Think about this message this morning.
In the yellow book, number 43.